country headlines. Tehran strongly condemns Washington's support for anti-Iranian terrorist groups, saying it brings to light the United States' false human rights posture. The French president says his country has delivered rocket launchers and weapons to Ukraine and will send more early next year. And heavy snowfall and low visibility from a strong winter storm blanket Canada's second busiest airport in Vancouver, halting all flights. Hello everyone, thank you for tuning in to World News. Iran's foreign ministry has strongly rejected a recent meeting between former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and the so-called leader of the Mujahideen Khalq terrorist organization known as the MKO. Foreign Ministry spokesman Abbas Kanani said meeting further proves Washington's cooperation with the murderers of 17,000 Iranians. Iranian officials said that by whitewashing terrorism and shamefully sanctifying the MKO leader, U.S. officials have laid bare the false face of American human rights. Kanani said the U.S. appeal to MKO terrorists is aimed at exerting pressure on the Islamic Republic. He said the White House will remain legally and internationally responsible for violating the rights of Iranians. In the meeting with MKO leader on Saturday, Pompeo reiterated support for the terrorist group. The former U.S. Secretary of State picked the leader of the terrorist group as, quote, Iran's president. Iran's Islamic Revolution leader says the U.S. is behind a deadly October attack on a holy shrine in southern Iran. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said U.S. is an accomplice to the crime, as Washington was the main sponsor and creator of the Daesh terrorist group, which claimed the attack. Leader made the comments during a meeting with families of the victims. He said killing pilgrims is quite different from other acts of terror and brings further disgrace to the enemy. Ayatollah Khamenei described those behind this terrorist act as liars and hypocrites. He said they claim to be advocates of human rights, but in practice create dangerous terrorist groups. The terrorist attack on Shah Cheragh Shrine in the city of Shiraz left 13 pilgrims dead, including a young boy. Earlier, we were joined by activist and political analyst Sarbaz Ruhollah Rezvi for his take on the Iranian leader's comments.
Ayatollah Khamenei has been again and again emphasizing on the role of media in recent years. Again and again, it's been repeating in his speeches, points, that the media should play an important role here because, you know, Americans are committing crimes every day at this region. One day it's in Afghanistan, one day it's in Iran, one day it's in Iraq, one day it's in Syria, and it goes on. But the point is that no one is taking United States of America accountable and responsible for what they are doing. And that is because they are expert in escaping and expert in making the propaganda war and covering their own crimes and highlighting others, concentrating on others. Very small, you know, unimportant issues are being highlighted by Americans in our region, and they're taking those issues to the mainstream media, and then actually they're covering their own crimes. Yet we have not, you know, acknowledged, we have not recognized this ongoing media war, which is, from my perspective, much more bigger than the field war.
Iran's foreign minister has called for dialogue among regional countries to jointly deal with challenges. He was addressing the second edition of the Baghdad Conference for Cooperation and Partnership held in Jordan. Earlier, we discussed this issue with our guests in our news review program.
The Iranian foreign minister is calling on regional countries to jointly deal with challenges facing West Asia. Hossein Amir Abdollahian stressed Iran's commitment to improving stability and security of the region with the help of neighbors. He reiterated the fact that dialogue among nations is a critical component to achieve such a process. The top diplomat also advocated a West Asia free of nuclear weapons. He also expressed Iran's solidarity with the Palestinian cause. Amir Abdollahian was addressing the second edition of the Baghdad Conference for Cooperation and Partnership held in Jordan. The summit aims to provide support for stability, security, and prosperity of Iraq and the region as a whole. Now, to get some insight on this, I'm going to invite a couple of guests. Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst, is joining me from Brussels. Also with me is John Bosnich, who's a journalist, activist, and political analyst in Belgrade. Welcome, gentlemen. Now, Elijah, this is not something that Iran is just recently mentioning. We had the Hormuz Peace Initiative during the Rouhani administration. Then Foreign Minister Zarif also put this proposal, and he told regional states, especially the Persian Gulf littoral states, that if there is any misunderstanding, let's get to the negotiating table and let's talk it over and see if we can do anything to remove the misunderstanding and bring further proximity and understanding among member states. And Iran has time and again stressed that it's us regional countries that should be able to, with the help of each other, tackle regional issues and crises. We don't need outside help. Let's have your comment on this.
Absolutely. That is only when the countries of the region in the Middle East are ready to turn toward each other and establish peace, economy, and understanding of the security without any foreign intervention from the United States of America or NATO. So if Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Jordan, and all the surrounding countries are ready to sit around the table and negotiate, that is possible to be achieved. However, as soon as we saw that the Americans are not really willing to sign the nuclear deal and abide by what Biden promised to do in ending the nuclear deal with Iran and to sign it and to respect it and to lift all the sanctions, the Saudis pulled back and stopped the meetings with Iran following 5 or 6 meetings in Baghdad. Therefore, if the Saudis are not ready to sit back and sit around the table again and discuss the security of the region without falling back once more toward the Americans or any other foreign force, this is not going to be achieved. Also, Iraq needs to clean its territory from all the terrorist groups that are operating in the north of the country and have shelters there. If that is not going to happen and Baghdad is not strong enough to impose its dominance and its sovereignty and eliminate the presence of terrorism in the country, then there is no possibility for stability in the Middle East. So it is not only related to what Iraq can do, what the Saudi Arabia can do, but also the normalization with Israel is creating another havoc and more element to stir up the differences and to prevent countries from coming together and sort out their differences. It is not in the advantage of Israel to see security in the Middle East because, for example, Iran is supporting the Palestinian cause, and the only thing that the Israelis want is to kill all the Palestinians and get rid of them. So there are a lot of contradictions that are happening in the Middle East, a reliance on America, reliance on Israel that is present in many countries that normalize. The security of Iraq is not secure and is not confirmed. And all the unrest and riots that foreign countries, including Saudi Arabia and the Americans, are interfering in Iran's domestic affair to create riots and changing the regime. I don't see this is going to go toward a reconciliation between all the countries in the Middle East because there is no strong will to do so.
Okay. Now, John, among the participants in this conference this is the second edition of the conference on cooperation and partnership that's being held in Jordan. Now, France is also, President Macron of France is also participating there. I mean, given what France has done in its record and performance in Africa and elsewhere in the world, I mean, as a representative of the West in West Asia region, the Middle East region, what's France doing there? I mean, how can Iran, for instance, or Iraq or any other country in this part of the world trust such a country to do anything. I mean, is the West really seeking security and stability for this part of the world?
Well, it looks very much as if the former colonial power, the French, the former French Empire, would like to keep its fingers in the pie, not only in Africa, but in Asia as well. And I would suggest that any regional conference based on developing local intra-country stability has to take place first, without the presence of external powers which have vested interests not only in their previous activities in the region, but also in their investment in individuals who they use as puppets in the region against the region's own local interests.
And John, do you also agree, like Iran is saying, that we do not need any powers from outside this region to do anything, especially given what's happened? See what the U.S. did in Afghanistan, what happened in Iraq and Syria and elsewhere.
That's an obvious conclusion, and in fact, it shouldn't even require to be a conclusion. It should be a starting point. A precondition for regional stabilization is the expulsion or the cutting off of dangerous and disruptive foreign elements from outside the region. Once you've built a stable coexistence among the local countries, then you can among yourselves determine on what terms and in what manner foreign powers could be present, either as donor nations trying to make up for the destruction they wrought in the past, or as technical transfer nations which could transfer to you some of the technologies which would facilitate the rebuilding and the re-economic building of the entire local economy.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Elijah Magner in Brussels, John Bosnich in Belgrade.
Iran announces plans to expand its nuclear energy program in line with its rights under the JCPOA, and that as the Vienna talks or the revival of the deal have been in a standoff. Yusuf Jalali has your story.
Iran's nuclear chief announced this week that the capacity of uranium enrichment in the country is now twice as high as the total volume produced since the onset of the nuclear industry in Iran. He made the remarks in an exhibition showcasing Iran's latest achievements in the nuclear sector.
We aim to generate 20% of the country's electricity from nuclear energy and the use of radiation technology.
This is one of the achievements Iran has publicized in recent days, which is viewed as a response to what Tehran describes as the West dilly-dallying on the revival of the 2015 deal. The pact has been in limbo since the U.S. walked out of it in 2018 and reinstated sanctions on Iran.
The Americans claim that the Vienna talks are no longer a priority for them amid the unrest in Iran. First of all, they have a role in engineering the riots. Secondly, they do want to resume the negotiations, but they are trying to use the unrest as a bargaining chip in the talks.
In October this year, Iran deployed more advanced centrifuges at its three enrichment facilities, increasing their total number to 4,000. The Atomic Energy Organization of Iran announced this week that it's now enriching uranium at a historic 60% rate using the new advanced centrifuges.
As hopes for the revival of the 2015 deal dwindle, Iran says it reserves its right to boost its nuclear energy program, which it says is clearly stipulated in the accord. The AEOI says it will not wait for the resumption of the Vienna talks and will continue to expand its nuclear activities for peaceful purposes. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Now, Russia says its companies are interested in cooperating with Iran on gas turbine technology and joint production. Russian Energy Minister Nikolai Shulganov said in a statement, there's a large potential for such cooperation. Now, Russia has been trying to start producing its own gas turbines for years, but the process has become more acute now due to Western sanctions over the Ukraine war. Some foreign companies, including Siemens, whose turbines are used to build modern gas plants, are also withdrawing from the Russian market or have already suspended operations. Russia and Iran have been expanding ties in various sectors, including energy and transport. In October, Tehran said it reached an agreement with Moscow to export locally made gas turbines to Russia. President Emmanuel Macron says France has so far given rocket launchers and weapons to Ukraine and will send more in early 2023. In an interview aired on Tuesday, the French president said countries provided Ukraine with air defense batteries and equipment. Macron said he's working with an armed forces minister to send arms and ammunition again in the first quarter of the new year. He also plans to deliver Caesar mobile artillery units, and that will depend on negotiations with Denmark, which had ordered the guns from France. Macron said Copenhagen may agree to give at least some of the arms to Ukraine. Paris has provided Kiev with a wide array of weapons since the war began in Ukraine in late February. This, as Russia maintains, more Western arms to Ukraine will only prolong the war. European households and industries are suffering from soaring energy bills, with some businesses being forced to shut down. Now, a new report suggests this is just the beginning of Europe's deepest crisis in decades. According to the report, skyrocketing energy prices triggered by the war in Ukraine have cost the Europeans nearly $1 trillion. Heavy snowfall and low visibility in the western Canada have halted all flights in Vancouver, with more disruptions expected to come right before the Christmas weekend. Reports say travel continues to be significantly impacted and more cancellations and delays will take place during the day. Meteorologists say low pressure system from the Pacific Ocean combined with very cold Arctic air over British Columbia dragged down temperatures. System brought up to 25 centimeters of snow to parts of the western province overnight. Environment Canada has issued extreme cold snowfall and Arctic outflow warnings for much of British Columbia. Agency has urged people to dress warmly and watch for hazardous driving conditions over the next couple of days. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., House Democrats are trying to introduce legislation to bar Donald Trump from office under the 14th Amendment. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. CBS News has covered this story, telling us more. House Democrats on Thursday, 15th of December, introduced legislation that would bar former President Donald Trump from holding any federal office in the future, citing Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. The legislation is spearheaded by Democratic Representative David Cicilline of Rhode Island, who was a House manager for Trump's second impeachment, and the bill also has 40 co-sponsors, all of them Democrats. It cites the provision in the 14th Amendment that says no one who has held government office and who engaged in insurrection or rebellion shall be able to hold federal office again. Donald Trump very clearly engaged in an insurrection on 6th of January 2021 with the intention of overturning the lawful and fair results of the 2020 election, David Cicilline argued in a statement. He added, "You don't get to lead a government you try to destroy." Even Mitch McConnell admits that Donald Trump bears responsibility, saying on the Senate floor that there is no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of 6th of January 2021. The 14th Amendment makes clear that based on his past behavior, Donald Trump is disqualified from ever holding federal office again, and under Section 5, Congress has the power to pass legislation to implement this prohibition, Cicilline added. The legislation goes into detail about how Donald Trump pushed then-Vice President Mike Pence to refuse to certify the election results, failed to do anything to denounce the mob assaulting the Capitol for hours, and intervened with government officials who didn't support his false claims of mass election fraud, among other things. The bill would need to pass both chambers of Congress with only days before Republicans take control of the House of Representatives and a substantial end-of-year agenda remaining. The legislation drops as the House Select Committee investigating the January 6, 2021 assault on the Capitol prepares to release its final report next week. That committee is only authorized to operation until the end of the year. The Hill newspaper has also covered the same story. A group of 40 House Democrats, led by Representative David Cicilline from Rhode Island, introduced legislation on Thursday, 15th of December, to bar former President Donald Trump from holding future federal office under the 14th Amendment. Section 3 of the amendment states that no one who previously took an oath to support the Constitution and engaged in insurrection or rebellion shall hold any office, civil or military, under the United States. Representative David Cicilline said in a release announcing the legislation that Trump very clearly engaged in an insurrection on 6th of January 2021 with the intention of overturning the results of the 2020 presidential election. "You don't get to lead a government you try to destroy," he said. The release states that the bill includes testimony and evidence demonstrating how Donald Trump engaged in the insurrection. The bill also specifically describes how Trump helped encourage the violence on 6th of January 2021, tried to intimidate state and federal officials when they did not support his false claims of the election being stolen, and refused to denounce the mob that stormed the Capitol building for hours during the riot. The 14th Amendment makes clear that based on his past behavior, Donald Trump is disqualified from ever holding federal office again, and under Section 5, Congress has the power to pass legislation to implement this prohibition, Cicilline said. David Cicilline, who served as an impeachment manager during Donald Trump's first impeachment, sent a letter to his Democratic colleagues last month to solicit co-sponsors for a bill to bar Donald Trump from holding office. Trump was impeached on a charge of incitement of insurrection in the aftermath of 6th of January 2021, but he was acquitted by the Senate. This was the second time that Trump was impeached, with the first one coming in December of 2019. Last month, Donald Trump became the first major candidate to announce a run for the presidency in 2024. The 14th Amendment was ratified in the aftermath of the American Civil War when ex-Confederates and seceded states rejoined the Union. Fox News Channel has also covered the same story and tells us more. A group of 40 House Democrats have put forward legislation that would bar former President Donald Trump from holding public office again under the 14th Amendment. Representative David Cicilline, a Democrat from Rhode Island, one of the House Democrats who led the second impeachment effort against Trump, introduced legislation on Thursday, 15th of December, with 40 Democratic co-sponsors that would invoke Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to prevent Trump from returning to the White House or holding any other office. The amendment states, "No person shall hold any office, civil or military, under the United States, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof." Democrats argue that this language, adopted in the 1860s to prevent former Confederates from occupying positions in the federal government after the Civil War, should be applied to Donald Trump, who they allege incited an insurrection against the United States on 6th of January 2021. Donald Trump very clearly engaged in an insurrection on 6th of January 2021 with the intention of overturning the lawful and fair results of the 2020 presidential election. "You don't get to lead a government you tried to destroy," David Cicilline said in a statement. The statement added, "Even Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell admits that Trump bears responsibility, saying on the Senate floor that there is no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of 6th of January 2021. The 14th Amendment makes clear that based on his past behavior, Donald Trump is disqualified from ever holding federal office again, and under Section 5, Congress has the power to pass legislation to implement this prohibition. Democrats say their legislation details testimony and evidence collected by the House Select Committee on the January 6th riot and reports on the events of that day to make the case that Donald Trump helped to plan and to encourage an insurrection to overturn the lawful results of the 2020 presidential election. Last month, Donald Trump announced his candidacy for president in 2024 in Palm Beach, Florida.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss your problems, questions that parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Imam Ali al-Islam says, know the importance of your youth before you get old, and know the importance of your old age before you get ill. Now, how you can help your adolescents to know the importance of their youth? You got to educate them about the changes that are happening in their bodies. And to know more on the topic, today in our studio, we have with us our special guest, Professor Salman Naqvi, who is a faculty member of Al-Mustafa University and a researcher in the Hawza Ilmi of Qom. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
Well, Professor Naqvi, we have been talking about the changes that take place in adolescents, and you said there are so many changes. There are biological changes, there are hormonal changes, there are physical changes, there are mental changes that take place in the life of an adolescent. But you as a parent should help the adolescent to educate about these changes. And also the important part with education is to help them in management of these changes. What else?
I would emphasize upon the importance for the development of the intellectual aspect of the child, so that he or she at that age, at the age of adolescence, because he or she is becoming a complete adult. Of course, we have two levels. One level is called bulugh in Arabic, the stage of puberty, where it becomes obligatory for a child to carry out these the responsibilities, not just the prayers and the ritualistic things. No, everything becomes necessary. All things which are wajib in Islam have to be observed. Or everything which is haram has to be refrained from. But there's a higher level that is called rushd.
Growth.
Rushd is a level where one's intellectual faculties become complete.
Okay.
He becomes a reasonable person. Therefore, in many countries, for example, the age for giving a driving license is 18.
Yeah.
Or even one is able to vote at the age of 18.
Yeah.
18 is considered to be a time where a person is now capable of making decisions on his own.
Independent
decisions. I mean, it's not necessarily 18. It could be before that, could be after that. Some children develop very quickly. They can become of that age at a very, even maybe at the time of puberty, if their development has taken place properly. But that rushd, and that is the way a person is capable to make his independent decisions. He can start a family life. He can manage his own way of earning his own living. He's expected to do things which he can become independent. In the West, in many countries, you see children at the age of 18, they start moving out of the parents' houses.
Yeah.
So that level, when one wants to achieve that level, of course, we should try to get to that level in regarding our children when they become 15 or whatever the age of puberty is. But it may extend beyond that. And in that period, the intellectual development is very important. Being able to make the right decisions is very important.
Yeah.
Therefore, this has to be worked upon, whether it is at school or whether it is at the home. They should complement each other. Intellectual development, awareness of our surroundings, awareness of one's own faculties, understanding what the world is about, going into the issues which are very, very complex maybe. And this understanding, I mean, for example, a person studies mathematics or philosophy or logic, things which make his pure reasoning
very strong.
Very strong. Pure reasoning, where one can depend on one's intellect and make decisions through pure reasoning. And after that, of course, application of that pure reasoning, both are important.
Yeah. We'll discuss more on that, Professor Nagavi, after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Nagavi, and we're discussing about the changes in adolescence. Professor Nagavi, before going to the break, you said you would rather suggest parents in these all these changes to have most of their focus on the reasonable aspect of their child.
I mean, basically, the hadith says, Al-aql ma yu'badu bihir rahman. Intellect is the faculty that Allah Almighty has given to human beings. And through this faculty, human beings are able to be the...
reach proximity.
To achieve the proximity of Allah Almighty. They can become the servants, the true servants of Allah Almighty, obedient servants to Allah Almighty. So the important thing is, again, as I said, I reinforce what I said before, Islam does not want to enforce and impose any sort of belief on human beings. Actually, it wants to say that you have to understand what is the truth. قَدْ تَبَيَّنَ الرُّشْدُ مِنَ الْغَيِّ فَمَنْ يَكْفُرْ بِالطَّاغُوتِ وَيُؤْمِنْ بِاللَّهِ فَقَدْ اسْتَمْسَكَ بِالْعُرْوَةِ الْوُثْقَى. It's where it says in the Ayatul Kursi, لَا إِكْرَاهَ فِي الدِّينِ. Deen, with regards to religion, nothing can be imposed. But the difference...
with logic.
Yes?
With logic.
The truth, the path of hidayah, of rushd, of growth and true development has become distinguished and separated from the path of deviance. And this قَدْ تَبَيَّنَ, and it has become clear through our thinking, yeah, and understanding. Therefore, Islam does not want to enforce anything, but it wants us to understand the truth, and that Allah Almighty is the absolute truth. So the intellect has to be developed in such a way that one really understands the whole concept of Tawheed, His absolute being, Allah being the absolute truth, and everything is under that. Everything comes follows after that. My feelings, my actions have to be managed and controlled under the umbrella of that truth. So intellectual development plays a very important role. And this cannot be left for later years. It has to start before puberty. It has to continue. And it has to be enforced, especially at this in the age of adolescence. Studying subjects which give us that proper understanding is important about our beliefs, about our morals, about our principles, about our worldview. All of them have to be thought about, understood, and this is the age where it has to be done. Therefore, whether it is at home, whether it is at the school, high school, where children are now becoming prepared to go to higher studies, or if they don't go to higher studies, they want to go into the marketplace to, yeah, start earning, whether it is that or that. In both cases, a person, a salih person, a competent person, a person who is competent enough to carry out his duties, and we shall discuss about the four aspects which are there, which, yeah, we have been talking about, that is the groundwork that has to be
done before
dying at that age.
Yeah, we'll discuss more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
The Prophet ﷺ said,
raise your children to have three features: love for your prophet, love for his household, and reciting the Quran.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I am Zainab with Professor Naqavi, and we're discussing about the changes that take place at the age of adolescence. Well, Professor Naqavi, before going to the break, you said it's very, very important to give focus on the reasonable aspect, because through reasoning, one can reach the highest levels of proximity or achieve proximity, and one has to understand the truth. And basically, you as a parent, when you're teaching your adolescent before puberty, all those things, and you're developing his intellectual level by the age of adolescence to a level where he understands the ultimate truth as Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and does not get overexcited with whatever he sees and is able to manage everything, you're basically helping the upcoming generations. You're basically guiding and upbringing them.
Exactly. So it means, it applies what a great deal of learning the parents have to do. I mean, if you want your children to learn properly and reach to higher levels of excellence and perfection, you need to be at a stage where you can take them along with you.
Yeah.
And if, unfortunately, the case is not so as it is in many households, due to a lot of reasons, poverty is there, many things, social issues are there which impede the growth of society. And one of the reasons that we are not progressing properly as humanity as a whole, especially third world countries, Muslim countries, most of them lag behind in many things because the opportunities to grow are not there. The opportunities have to be provided. We can't enforce anything. We have to provide a conducive atmosphere, whether it is the state, whether it is the learning institute that a child goes to, the school, the college, whether it is at home. All of them should be focused upon, number one, intellectual development, number two, emotional development, number three, physical development, and based on this, ideological development, and the ethical and moral values that have to be inculcated and which then manifest themselves in the actions which are required of from a human being, a competent Muslim. And they then he has to or she has to manage the four relationships which are the basic elements of a pure life. The pure life that Allah wants us to live is under the umbrella of Tawheed, recognizing him to be the ultimate truth, and to manage all our affairs, all our actions, based on those pure intentions in life, with oneself, with Allah Almighty in the specific sense, ibadah, and then with other human beings, and then even with the environment. So this has to be developed. I believe that adolescence is the very important step in this development. That is the time where all our efforts, which started from the time that the child was came into this world, till the time now he or she wants to become an adult and an independent person, this final stage is the most important stage, in the sense that that is the final thing that a parent can do. Beyond that, there's nothing which the parents can expect to do.
Yeah, so it's very, very important that you're saying that it is the final stage, not the beginning stage, because that's how it's misunderstood, and that's how things become very, very difficult for parents with their adolescents. It's because they think that adolescence is the beginning age, while as per you, you're saying that it's not the beginning stage. It may be the final stage. Thank you so much, Professor Naqavi, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for being with us. In case you want to listen to our programs, please go back to our official website, which is www.parstoday.com. You can go to the tab Call of Islam and find our programs out there. And in case you want to search us on the social media platforms, just type Call of Islam Radio. In case you have any questions, queries, or issues, you can feel free to share with us on our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir. With that, we end our today's session. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
California Congressman Adam Schiff said on Sunday, 18th of December, that he believes there is sufficient evidence to criminally charge former President Donald Trump in relation to his efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. California Congressman Adam Schiff said on Sunday that he believes there is sufficient evidence to criminally charge former President Donald Trump in relation to his efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Adam Schiff's dramatic statement on CNN's State of the Union program came just one day before the House January 6 Select Committee, to which he belongs, is poised to release an outline of its extensive investigative report on the U.S. Capitol attack, which has been linked to 9 deaths, including the suicides of traumatized law enforcement officers. The committee is expected to use its last meeting on Monday to refer Donald Trump, as well as others, to the U.S. Justice Department in relation to the former president's attempts to reverse his 2020 defeat to Joe Biden. During this final meeting, the House panel is expected to outline an executive summary of its findings, propose legislative recommendations, vote to adopt the report, and then vote on possible criminal and civil referrals. Adam Schiff is one of 9 members, 7 of whom are Democrats like him, serving on the January 6 committee. The potential referrals involving Donald Trump are expected to involve obstruction of an official congressional proceeding, as well as conspiracy to defraud the United States. The Guardian first reported the nature of these referrals. Adam Schiff told CNN host Jake Tapper that he can't comment on specifics of any possible referrals. The predicted criminal referrals are effectively symbolic because Congress can't force prosecutors to pursue charges. I think that the evidence is there that Donald Trump committed criminal offenses in connection with his efforts to overturn the election, said Adam Schiff, who chairs the House Intelligence Committee. Adam Schiff added, "And viewing it as a former prosecutor, I think there's sufficient evidence to charge the former president." CNN host Jake Tapper asked Adam Schiff whether this was enough to secure a conviction. "Well, I don't know what the Justice Department has. I do know what's in the public record. The evidence seems pretty plain to me, but I would want to see the full body of evidence if I were in the prosecutor's shoes to make decision," Adam Schiff responded. But this is someone who in multiple ways tried to pressure state officials to find votes that didn't exist. This is someone who tried to interfere with a joint session of the Congress, even inciting a mob to attack the Capitol. If that's not criminal, then I don't know what it is. Asked whether he thought Donald Trump would face criminal charges, Adam Schiff said, "The short answer is I don't know. I think that he should face criminal charges. I think he should face the same remedy, force of law, that anyone else would." Adam Schiff said he was worried, however, that it may take until he is no longer politically relevant for justice to be served. "That's not the way it should be in this country, but there seems to be an added evidentiary burden with someone who has a large enough following. That simply should not be the case, but I find it hard otherwise to explain why, almost 2 years from the events of 6th of January 2021, and with the evidence that's already in the public domain, why the Justice Department hasn't moved more quickly than it has," Adam Schiff said. The Guardian previously reported that Trump allies who might face criminal referrals include former high-ranking White House staffers. The panel is also expected to make civil referrals to the House Ethics Committee involving Republican Congress members, as well as suggest disbarment of some of Donald Trump's attorneys. The January 6th committee has largely concluded that the insurrection was rooted in a conspiracy, sources previously told Guardian. The panel, the House panel, found that Donald Trump oversaw a political plan for his Vice President Mike Pence to refuse to certify election results in a joint session of Congress on 6th of January 2021, as well as a coup plot to force Congress's hand if he refused. Committee investigators think that Donald Trump's alleged desire to illegally thwart the certification of the election he lost was obvious months before 6th of January 2021. They believe it extended from the time he agreed with a fake electoral plot so states would swap Biden's Electoral College votes for him until he refused for hours to call off Capitol attackers. Donald Trump did not leave documentary evidence of his alleged involvement, but his staffers left a paper trail. During Trump's presidency, he used his power to stifle inquiries, the House committee is expected to say. NBC News has also covered the same story. Representative Adam Schiff, a Democrat from California, said on Sunday that the House January 6th committee has evidence that former President Donald Trump broke the law, but he declined to get specific about the criminal referrals it could make ahead of the House panel's final meeting on Monday. In an interview on CNN's State of the Union program, Adam Schiff, a member of the committee, cited multiple efforts by Donald Trump to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election, including pressuring state officials to go along with his false claims of widespread election fraud. "If that's not criminal, then I don't know what is," he said. Adam Schiff, however, declined to comment on the possible referrals the committee could make, saying the panel is set to vote on them and will reveal its decision on Monday, as well as release its final report this month. But I can tell you that our process has been to look meticulously at the evidence and compare it to various statutes. If there is sufficient evidence as to each element of a particular crime, he said, we are not referring, or at least won't be voting to refer anyone we think there may be evidence, because we want to focus on those for which we believe there's the strongest evidence. The committee, which has been forecasting the possibility of referring Donald Trump to the Justice Department for a crime, is actively considering charges of insurrection, obstruction of an official proceeding of Congress, and conspiracy. While all three charges are possible, the House panel has not yet made a final decision, three sources involved in the committee's deliberations said last week. The potential recommendations are not necessarily reserved for Donald Trump, and they could also include referrals to other government agencies or to the House Ethics Committee. California Congressman Adam Schiff reiterated that he thinks Trump violated multiple criminal laws and should be prosecuted like any other American who breaks the law. Asked whether the House panel will refer members of Congress who ignored subpoenas from the panel to the Ethics Committee, Adam Schiff said its decision on the appropriate remedy for those lawmakers, who include Representatives Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio, and Scott Perry, a Republican from Pennsylvania, will also be made public on Monday. We have weighed what is the remedy for members of Congress. Is it a criminal referral to another branch of government, or is it better that Congress police its own, he said, adding that the House panel has considered censure and ethics referrals.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.